Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
The Defense Department is trying to make benefits administration simpler for reservists. Currently, service members in reserve ranks have more than 30 duty statuses to wade through to figure out what benefits they're entitled to. Often changes in orders lead to gaps in benefits. DOD has a new plan to simplify all of that and expand benefits also. More now from Federal News Radio, Scott Mossione.
For years, people in the Defense Department, on advisory boards, and in think tanks railed against the reserve status system. The Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization Commission called it complex and said it aligned poorly with training and mission support requirements. The commission said the system fostered inconsistencies in compensation and budgeting, not to mention it caused disruptions in pay and benefits for reservists as they move from one status to another. There are 32 different duty statuses that comprise a wide array of tasks reservists complete. Reservists might get different benefits and pay when dealing with a state of emergency, training for a contingency, training at home, or mobilizing for a trip abroad. That's a sticky bureaucratic bog to wade through when you just want to know what your healthcare plan is or what your next paycheck will look like. But last month, DOD met with congressional leaders to present a plan that will cut the number of duty statuses to 4. Here's a conversation I had with Todd Weiler, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, about the proposed system compared to the current system.
The goal here was, one, to streamline that into something that's a little more user-friendly, if you will, for our service population, for our reservists, because they're the ones that are constantly having to struggle to figure out what their benefits are associated with the orders by which they have been activated. So that was one item. The other item is by streamlining create efficiencies in the way in which we conduct our business. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, by bringing the number of statuses down to a manageable number that's associated with different duties, we can then equalize the benefits across those duties. So, for example, survivor benefits would be the exact same across a certain duty area, or benefits regarding retirement would be exactly the same across a certain duty area, and not specifically tied to the statutory authority or the way in which we activated someone. The 4 major categories pretty much align to you're mobilized for a contingency operation, you're mobilized for, or you're activated for active duty other than contingency operation, you're doing what used to be called IDT duty, your normal drill duty, or the last category is basically approved studies.
So this would be more, I guess it would be more of an expansion of benefits probably as you continue to consolidate these statuses, right?
So, you know, when we started, that was a concern of some folks, is that this might be very expensive,
right?
Because you would actually be increasing benefits for a lot of people. But as we got into it and really began the nug work, we found out that in the vast majority of the cases, and we are talking about, you know, it's not just the 30 plus authorities by which we bring folks on. It's all of the associated benefits there, because each authority may have a different set of benefits. So you can imagine the matrix that was involved in this work. It was massive. And what we found out was that the vast majority of areas where we needed to create equity and benefits it was very easy to do. There was very little or no cost at all. What this does is it creates equity. It takes these major 32 duty statuses and brings it down to four major categories and creates equity among the benefits within each of those four categories.
There's 400 statutes that this kind of intersects and interweaves with. You know, how much of this can be changed through policy and executive decision, and how much is going to be needed from Congress and actual legislation?
Of the 400 statutes, that's obviously going to require congressional action.
Right.
So we will be working with Congress. Hopefully, obviously, this will be for the new team coming in, but there will be work with Congress, and this will you know, probably be a year-long process in addressing each of these 400 statutes. But within the department, there are also, in addition to that 400, there's about 100 different policies and directives that will need to be adjusted within the department. So my guess is that as this moves forward, what you will see and what folks in the field will experience is we will try to align authorities by which we bring reservists on duty in such a way that we can create as much equity as possible with benefits in the current system. And so you will run the current system while you're building the new system, and they'll kind of run, you know, together for a period of time, which is the way the department does most, you know, major initiatives, is that you want to make sure you don't just flip a switch and figure out you broke something. So my guess is that this will be a, you know, this will be a multi-year implementation to get us finally down to four major categories, which will greatly streamline not only how we access our reserve components, but create equity and benefits.
DoD is required to implement a new system by October of 2018. In Washington, Scott Massioni, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.
Find this and all of our DoD coverage at FederalNewsRadio.com. I'm Tom Temin.
Pentagon Solutions will return after these messages.
Listening to Pentagon Solutions on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
At the Defense Department, the shadow of Robert S. McNamara lingers to this day. For example, when contractors enter data to be used by the Cost Assessment and Program Evaluation Office, or CAPE, they do so by hand, using tables dating to the 1960s. Those quickly fill up big three-ring binders. Imagine the cost of something like that for, say, the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. Now a new system called FlexFile has the potential to wipe away that paperwork. Joining me to explain it, Jamie Morin, director of CAPE. Jamie, good to have you on.
Thanks. Nice to be with you.
First of all, tell us a little background on what exactly the Cost Assessment and Program Evaluation Office does, where it fits into the pantheon there at the Pentagon.
Sure. So the CAPE office is a part of the Office of the Secretary of Defense. It is established by law as a direct reporting office to the Secretary, and we work very closely with both the Secretary and the Deputy Secretary to support them on four major mission areas. The first is to prepare independent cost estimates on major acquisition programs. The second is, on behalf of the Secretary, to run the process which builds the annual Future Years Defense Plan. That's our Department of Defense's 5-year budget and human resource plan. We also, to support that, maintain the authoritative record of the program decisions. That's an innovation that Secretary McNamara put into place, as you mentioned, and has given the department for the last 50-plus years a clear track on what we are buying and the forces we field. It's really important for historical analysis and for planning purposes. And then finally, we're sort of the hired gun for the Secretary on long-term studies and analyses. Could cover an incredible range of topics. In my tenure here, we've done work on sexual assault prevention. We've done work on the recovery and identification of the remains of POWs and MIAs. And we've done work on a host of high-tech challenges that relate directly to the warfighting capability of the Department of Defense.
And getting to the cost information about different programs, it's hard to believe, actually, that there is still paper involved. Here it is in 2016, but it's true?
Well, what we really use is essentially electronic versions of paper forms, but they are as simple as that. It is not a modern data interchange. It's replicating those paper documents, forms that were created 40 and 50 years ago, in a computerized version. So what we're moving to now with the advent of the Flex Files is much more of a modern electronic data interchange where we'll be taking direct feeds from contractors' cost databases internally.
What sort of cost information, for example, would be coming in under a program like the F-35? I imagine that must be almost inconceivably complex.
It is a lot of information. So in the Cost Assessment and Program Evaluation Office, since the 1960s, we've been collecting actual cost information, meaning when you have completed developing or building a product for the U.S. government, you need to report in a structured way, what we call a work breakdown structure, exactly what costs you incurred. We do that primarily to support future decision making. So it's not so much to know whether you, in building a particular lot of F-35 aircraft, did a great job or not. It's more that when we come to the F-36 aircraft, or whatever the next generation fighter is called, that we are prepared with the best possible foundation to make decisions about the characteristics of that aircraft and to set aside the appropriate resources so that we can actually build it. This is really all about producing stable programs, which is something that we hear a lot about in our partnership with industry. When we in the government have to introduce uncertainty or changes in programs because the budgets aren't available to support the plans as originally written, that does damage on the industry side. It does damage on the government side. It results in fielding capability less rapidly than we need. And so getting your cost estimates right at the beginning of a program and then having the fiscal discipline to reserve the funds you need to carry it out is a win-win for the government and the industry in that it gives both sides the stability that lets us actually field the capability we need.
We're speaking with Jamie Morin, Director of the Cost Assessment and Program Evaluation Office at the Pentagon. And let's go into FlexFile a little bit more deeply. How does it work, and what are some of the outcomes that you've seen?
Sure. This is really just a move to the modern data age. Right now, what industry has to do in filling out our current cost and software data reporting forms is translate from modern financial management that they use internally to allocate their resources, conduct their billing, all of the things that a big company has to do. They have to walk from that into these very archaic form structures. In many cases, that requires them to make judgment calls about how to allocate costs. So their organizational structure perhaps doesn't align with our form structure, and so they have to make a decision. All right, 40% of this person's time is allocated in this way and 60% in this other way. In many cases, those are tough judgments to make and tough judgments to justify and raises questions in folks' minds about Are they submitting only reliable information to the government? Will they be held to account for mistakes in it? So what we're moving to with FlexFiles is really taking data from industry as it exists. Rather than telling them, here is how you must provide us this data, we are working to build a translation that will take the data, however it exists on their financial systems, pull it into our cost reporting system, and still produce on the other end the insight we need with much more transparent decision-making about those sort of allocation issues I mentioned earlier.
Are you also modernizing the tables that you use, or is this simply a data translation and exchange type of program?
In a sense, we're doing away with the tables. We're taking raw data from their financial systems, ingesting it. It ends up being much, much more data at deeper levels of granularity. But because it's the data that the contractors are organically producing in order to run their business, it doesn't constitute an additional burden for them. So it's making the data more accessible to more people who need to do analysis within the government. It's cutting down on the time it takes to produce the reports. It's cutting down on transmission errors in loading the reports. And it's all part of this broader theme in our department that we've been executing now for the last 3-4 years. As part of our cost assessment data enterprise, which is really a department-wide effort to improve our data and thereby give us a stronger foundation to do analysis so that we can make the right decisions for the taxpayer and for our military members.
And given that we are in the age of data analytics, it sounds like the amount of data that you are getting gives rise to the possibility, anyway, of doing much more analysis on costs and trends than you could do in the old days with the tables.
That's right. And we've actually seen that play out in some of the pilot cases we have done with FlexFiles, and also in some other one-off analytic efforts we've done with specific contractors, where when we have developed a cost estimate, they've identified areas where the assumptions we had to come to based on the legacy cost reporting that they had provided didn't match the reality of their operations, and individual contractors were willing to give us dramatic visibility into their internal financial management system so that we could see where the existing reporting rules left us with imperfect insight. In fact, we've made changes to cost estimates based on that enhanced visibility that they've provided.
Sounds like you've reached the holy grail of faster, better, and cheaper.
Well, this is a change. So it doesn't come completely free, and it doesn't come without any risk. But I think it's a very much a common sense change, and I think it is going to be beneficial for all sides. We've been partnered with a number of industry players through some pilot activities, and we'll be over the next several months in a process of updating the official data standards for the department so that this becomes the official approach to doing cost and software data reporting.
Well, I'm sure Robert S. McNamara himself would be pleased at this upgrade.
I hope so. He's, of course, no longer with us. But this is of a piece with the scientific management approach, if you will, that he tried to bring to the department, bringing the department to a focus on data versus just anecdote. That's back in the 1960s. We, of course, manage the department with vastly more data today than he had available to him or than his successors have had. But we can continually improve in that regard. And this is just one in a series of areas where we're working to do that, harnessing modern data tools, harnessing organic and reliable data wherever we can, as opposed to imposing specialized reporting burdens. And letting that data pervade defense decision-making. That's the essence of getting to more efficient and effective use of taxpayer resources, and it is enormously high potential for the Department of Defense.
Jamie Morin is Director of the Cost Assessment and Program Evaluation Office at the Pentagon. Thanks so much for joining me.
It's been my pleasure.
Find out more about the FlexFile system and a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.